The CDC reports new HIV infections fell by 19% from 2018 to 2022, but there's been a 12% increase in infections among Latino people. We've just marked World AIDS Day, which reminds us all that this fight continues.
The Latino community has had actually a worsening situation in terms of HIV prevention and treatment, and that's gone largely invisible. It's not received much recognition. And certainly when we have in fact raised the alarm, which over the past 10 years we've been trying to do that, we haven't had much success in terms of specific action steps.
Our guests today are Dr. Vincent Guillermo Ramos, Executive Director of the Institute for Policy Solutions at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, and Dr. Marwan Haddad, Medical Director of the Center for Key Populations at Community Health Center, Inc. and the Moses Weitzman Health System.
Ready, Set, Prep, I think, was a great program to sort of access. I'm actually worried for the next 4 years, because we know we're hearing about potential decrease in funding. And whenever we need to sort of start to scale up programs, that's going to take funding in terms of us doing that.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Well, Vincent and Marwan, welcome to both of you to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Vincent. You've written a piece in the New England Journal of Medicine titled "The U.S. Latino HIV Crisis, Ending an Era of Invisibility." I'm wondering if you could just share with our audience your concerns that you expressed in the article.
So thank you, Mark, for that question. I want to start by saying that I think as a nation that we have had tremendous success in ending HIV. It would be unfair of me not to acknowledge that. Because of that success and because we have a national Ending the HIV initiative, much of our messaging has been around progress, and that's a good thing. It really has motivated us, all of us, to continue working to making HIV something that is no longer what it was historically. Having said that, because of that positive messaging, what's been invisible is that all communities have not benefited equally. And in fact, some, for our purposes today, and what's written in the New England Journal of Medicine paper, the Latino community has had actually a worsening situation in terms of HIV prevention and treatment. And that's gone largely invisible. It's not received much recognition. And certainly when we have in fact raised the alarm, which over the past 10 years we've been trying to do that, we haven't had much success in terms of specific action steps. So that's really, Mark, what the paper is about. It's really arguing that if we are, in fact, as a nation going to end HIV, that we've got to lean in and make sure that everyone, including the Latino community, is benefiting from all the progress that we've made.
Well, Vincent, thank you for highlighting that. And I think 2022 was the first year that new HIV infections in Latino men who have sex with men outpaced those in all other racial and ethnic groups. So we're now 2 years past this news. CDC has allocated, I think, about $975 million recently for HIV prevention. Do you think there's been enough of a public response from all quarters on this particular issue of the increase in Latino population?
So, Margaret, thank you. That's a great question. And, an honest answer would be to simply state again what I shared about there's been tremendous progress. I don't want to convey to anyone listening or viewing that as a nation, there's not a lot that we should be proud of. At the same time, there's more work that needs to happen. And in fact, I think, while we're talking about the New England Journal of Medicine paper, the truth is that we've been raising the alarm for quite some time, for over a decade. We published in 2020 a paper in the American Journal of Public Health, where we not only documented that since 2010, there have been increases in new HIV infections in Latinos, we forecasted that if we didn't do something back when we published the AJPH paper, the American Journal of Public Health paper in 2020, that we would arrive at this point. And so, Margaret, you're right. This is very troublesome because this most recent data that was released by the CDC in May of this past year, it actually reported that Latino men that have sex with men are the number one group in terms of new infections across the board. That's something that was not the case in the past. And even more troublesome is that when we look at younger Latino MSM, so ages 24 to 35, we see a 95% increase in new infections between 2010 and the most recent data in 2022. We know what to do. We've actually done it. We've made significant progress as a nation. The question is, are we willing to lean in and apply those same techniques, those same tools, those same best practices to ending HIV in the Latino community?
Well, to do that, we're going to clearly need more equitable funding. And you've raised that, right, for the Latino specific HIV research. What's that look like? You know, as you sort of paint a picture, new administrations come in. What would you say the dollar amounts are or the types of questions that would be answered in this funding?
It's a great question, Mark. I would say there's a couple of things that we highlight in the New England Journal of Medicine paper. First is raising the visibility. And so again, thank you for the opportunity to talk about the Latino community on this particular podcast. You know, we need a multi-sectoral approach. We need everyone involved, from media to pharma to universities, the healthcare sector, public health, government. We need significant investments and more investments that are in alignment with the specific needs of the Latino community. What I'm fearful of is that if we do make some shifts in addressing the Latino community needs, it doesn't mean that I'm advocating that we reduce sort of funding in other places. Other communities as well need support. We need additional resources. We need to engage the Latino community in meaningful ways. We can't resolve this without really embracing the communities that are most impacted. We need to redesign our public health and our healthcare approaches so that they're better in alignment with the needs of the Latino community. That means bilingual and bicultural healthcare providers. That means integrating clinical and social care. That means moving care into settings where Latinos are. We also need to address the structural drivers that are shaping the lives of Latinos and realize that when we have sort of messages of anti-immigrant sentiment, when we exclusively focus on the border, which obviously is something very important, but not the only issue that we as a Latino community are facing, that doesn't help us to make it so that every single Latino in need of HIV prevention and treatment feels welcomed and able to benefit from those services. And then, Mark, finally, your question, which is about research, implementation science, and really taking the tools that we have developed. We have done a lot in terms of discovery. We need to take the things that we know that work and figure out through research how we can implement them in ways that the Latino community can benefit.
Well, thank you, Vincent, for that. I want to come back at some point to some more of the specifics about what you would be recommending based on your research, but I want to turn to Marwan for a second. Marwan, we of course know you so well. You've led up the HIV efforts as family physician, HIV specialist, head of the Center for Key Populations at CHC and the Moses Weizmann Health System. But as a colleague, let's ask you a general question. Where are we in the overall effort to prevent HIV and cure AIDS?
Oh, thanks, Margaret, for that question. And, you know, I want to sort of reiterate what Vincent said, that we have, as a country, made major strides in sort of towards getting to the point where we hopefully will end the HIV epidemic. However, when we look in the context of the initiative, the Ending the HIV, National Ending the HIV Epidemic Initiative, the goals that they outline there is that we need to get to 75% reduction of new HIV infections by 2025 and 90% reduction of new infections by 2030. And I think, or I believe, we're not going to come close to meeting these goals as it stands today. While we have made major strides in this, we're not going to meet those lofty goals of getting down to where we need to achieve those percentage decreases. We have extremely effective strategies, though, right? We've got the tools to do it. We have the tools to end the new infections today. We're just not reaching those who can benefit the most from these interventions and those who are acquiring HIV now, right? So every year, despite the fact that we've decreased the new infection rates, we're still getting 36 to 37 new infections each year. And when we look at who's getting infected, 70% of these new infections are among Black and Hispanic individuals, 70%. And the majority are among gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men, with the next populations getting infected being Black women, and then Black men and Hispanic men. And so we have the PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, that prevents new infections, right? This is medication that's taken before HIV exposure, and that can stop acquiring the acquisition of HIV by over 99%. We also have HIV treatment as prevention, or what we call undetectable equals untransmittable, mm-hmm. which is when we identify people with HIV, we engage them in care, get them on HIV medication, and get the virus in their blood to undetectable levels, then they cannot transmit this virus to their sexual partners, period. So these are incredibly, incredibly effective tools. So we have it. However, we only have over a third of people who can benefit from PrEP have been prescribed PrEP. And if we break that down to what sort of Vincent was saying in terms of race and ethnicity lines, only about 13% of Blacks and 24% of Hispanics who can benefit from PrEP have received it, compared to 94% of whites. And when we think about this, 70% of new infections are among Black and Hispanics. And so we're not really reaching the people we need to reach when it comes to prevention. Similarly, when we look at people with HIV who are virally suppressed, only two-thirds are in our nation. That means that one in three individuals with HIV currently are out there either not engaged in treatment or not on, on virally suppressive medication, and they can continue to transmit the virus to others. We can stop this. We have these extremely effective tools. We just have to get them to the people who need them the most.
Vincent, Marwin laid out some of the shortcomings that we have, but there is also some good news, right? The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services states that HIV incidence among people aged 13 and older has declined 21%, but it's targeted in jurisdictions receiving funding from the ending of the HIV epidemic program, compared to 12% in the nation overall. And actually, the implications are pretty significant. $5 billion in savings over the lifetime due to the 9,500 fewer HIV infections. I'm just wondering, there's a lot of noise out there. I'm wondering if this message is getting through to people.
Sure. So thanks for, excuse me, Mark, that question. And, you know, the answer is mixed. And on one hand, I completely agree that as a nation, we've had tremendous progress. Most people living with HIV are aware of their status. Increasingly, we have been able to link people to care. We have very effective treatments, as Marwin was saying, increasingly easier to actually dose and to take, and longer acting. We have more and more ability to prevent new acquisition of HIV. We have reduced stigma in society, and certainly there still is stigma, but nothing like it had been in the past. There's a lot to be excited about, Mark. And so I want to be clear mm-hmm. that the HIV epidemic has been very effective, and it's pretty straightforward. In some ways, it has very predictable results. You know, you identify jurisdictions that have the highest rates of new infections, where there's a preponderance of people living with HIV, and you focus on those areas. And if you do the things that align services with the people, you get positive results. That is all true. I think the thing that is challenging, and what I want to come back to, is that despite us having all these tools, and you know, Marwin did such a nice job at using PrEP as an example, we have inequitable healthcare and health in our nation. And you know, I don't want to move us off of HIV, but I do feel it's important to put this in a broader context. In June of this past year, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine released a 20-year follow-up to the Unequal Treatment Report. That report, as you guys remember, in 2003, right. was a landmark report. It said that we are a nation that has huge inequities, inequities being unjust, unfair, negative outcomes that are a function of how we practice and our policies and the way that care is set up. Well, we went back and I served on that committee, and one of the things that was really surprising to me was that 20 years have passed, and as a nation, we have made very little progress in terms of eliminating those inequities. And that's also true of HIV. And so what we see is that while we are in fact making progress, we still have huge challenges. And those challenges, as Marwin said, are concentrated in certain groups. For today, I'm advocating for the Latino community. But let's be clear, you know, we're not out of the woods in terms of African Americans, in terms of transgender communities, in terms of people who use substances. We have a lot of work to do.
That is certainly a clarion call. And I, you know, this might be a question for both of you, but Marwin, let me start with you on this. Certainly, we understand there are calls for a community engaged approach, and maybe similar to what was used during the national Mpox vaccination campaign, which is fresh in people's memories. It was very recent. Maybe take us through why that worked and how that might help us here. And certainly, Marwan, I was giving you a chance to start knowing your deep familiarity with mobile health units and going where the patients are. But Vincent, I know you have a lot of experience in this area as well. So Marwan, do you want to start maybe?
Sure. Thank you, Margaret, for that. So, I mean, I think sort of what we've been alluding to sort of all along is that we need to really relook at how we're delivering care and who is actually currently receiving the care. And I think we need to come up with more innovative approaches to how we reach the people who most desperately need to be reached, right? And so we sort of saw that with COVID. We saw that with sort of Mpox. And we were able, like, to sort of mass mobilize and get out there. And, you know, you mentioned the mobile health vans, and you know how excited I am about mobile health as well as street medicine, because in many ways, it's that last sort of frontier. We always talk about, you know, meeting people where they're at. But even when we use those terms, we're still saying that those people meeting them where they're at still have to come to us, right? They still have to walk to the brick and mortar sites. And that's not really meeting where people are at, right? We need to get out there, get out onto the streets, get to the, I don't know, the barbershops, get to the stores. Maybe it's the Walmarts, you know, maybe it's the pharmacies. It's really thinking outside the box and going beyond just simply the brick and mortar sites to be able to get to the people that we need to get to. It's the messaging. It's the social messaging. People need to see themselves reflected in who's delivering the message. We need to regain the trust of the public, right? I think over the number of years and through COVID, we have lost the trust of the public in many ways. And so we need to figure out how we message this back again. And so we need to invest the money in these new innovative models. We need to invest the money back in terms of the social messaging and the education. And we also need to prop up our workforce that's going to look like the people we're trying to reach. And we know that if people see themselves in the workforce from every level, right? From administrators and doctors and nurse practitioners down to the medical assistants and the front desk staff who are answering the phones. People need to see that they are reflected in who they are. And that is true for Black and Hispanic, as well as for gay and straight and trans and non-binary. We need to sort of prop that up. And I think we have that infrastructure. We've done it, right? We were able to do it with COVID and with Mpox. We just need to start doing it now with more sort of targeted with HIV prevention and treatment.
Mm-hmm. Vincent, do you want to add anything to that?
So just really briefly, I'll say Marwan did a fantastic job at really helping us to think about community engagement and broadening the conversation. I would maybe just reinforce and build on what Marwan shared by saying that meaningful community engagement is really elevating the community members to being equal partners in the design and in the delivery of healthcare. It means not a top-down approach, not a health system that is prescribing, but really a true partnership where those that are most impacted, affected, key stakeholders get to work together to think about how they can proceed collectively in ways that they can address the issue for our purposes, HIV.
You know, Vincent, Marwan mentioned social messaging. And in the last answer, you were talking about stigma. And I want to pull the thread on that because a Latino advocate told CNN that feeling uncomfortable sharing information with relatives or others is one of the main barriers faced at those at risk of getting HIV and those living with HIV. And she cited the strong religious influences in the community. I'm just wondering if you can elaborate on that and sort of talk about the challenges that this specific population has, but it also may be something that's been shared by other populations as well. And how do we address it. And you've been talking about raising the visibility of individuals, making sure their voice is heard. But tell us a little more.
So, Mark, thanks for that question. Such an important issue. Stigma, HIV stigma still persists and is certainly a factor that impacts people, including Latinos at risk and living with HIV. There was a recent MMWR, actually a couple of years ago, that looked at Latinos living with HIV and their experiences in healthcare. And there were some troublesome results. And so I'm intentionally, Mark, focusing on the sort of systems of care and less on the individuals, but I'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. Because what they reported was that they had experiences when they were receiving care that were pretty distressing, you know, feeling like people were judgmental, their healthcare providers, you know, all of us, not pointing fingers at any one group, but all of us, not feeling welcomed in the clinic, feeling like they were being talked down to, feeling like, you know, they were in a setting where their best interests were not really at the forefront of how care was delivered.
Well, after several decades, I would hope that we had made more progress than we seem to have, but we will stay with the fight. Marwan, you're the former chair of the HIV Medicine Association. It created a guide for what President-elect Trump did on these issues during his first term. There's some notable achievements, including Ready, Set, Prep, the program to provide HIV prevention medication donated by pharmaceutical company to people who don't have prescription drug coverage. Would you like to opine on how you're thinking about the next 4 years and what we might see?
Yeah. So definitely, you know, at the HIV Medicine Association, which is part of the Infectious Diseases Society of America, we definitely sort of advocated for a number of principles in particular, right, that we thought we needed to sort of highlight that truly to end the HIV epidemic as the Trump administration has sort of kicked off that national initiative. And that really included ensuring, you know, healthcare access for all, equal access, you know, equitable access, addressing social determinants of health, meeting people where they are, as we talked about, and funding innovative care models, addressing the mental health and substance use epidemics that we're in, as well as Vincent said, talking not only about drugs, but also about sex and ensuring that sexual health and education happens, and as well as looking at prescription prices, right? Fair prescription prices from some of those. And while the Ready, Set, Prep, I think, was a great program to sort of access, I'm actually worried for the next 4 years, because we know we're hearing about potential decrease in funding. And whenever we need to sort of start to scale up programs, that's going to take funding in terms of us doing that. And so we need to continue to look at funding innovative models, as we talked about, and really looking at different places. If people are doing fairly well, we can get them in, and then maybe see them once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And so that we don't necessarily need to see them six times a year, whereas others we need to sort of scale up and put in more resources to be able to see individuals who are struggling more often. We need to sort of really approach this in a syndemic fashion. Mm-hmm. So what we mean by syndemics is there's, you know, parallel epidemics that are occurring at the same time that intersect and worsen each other, especially in the context of social determinants of health that work against the epidemics. And so when we talk about the HIV syndemic, we're talking about the substance use epidemic, the mental health epidemic, the STI epidemic, and the viral hepatitis epidemic. And there's been progress in trying to break down those silos to be able to sort of really look at funding sort of parallel programs so that way we can integrate it more. And as you know, I am a huge advocate of integrating care across the board, because that's how we're going to get to where we need to get to in terms of handling the HIV epidemic and getting ahead of it, as well as these other epidemics. We have to address housing, transportation, food insecurity that we know our most vulnerable are struggling with, which is why they're not making it in and engaging in care and staying in care. We need to welcome, and as sort of Vincent sort of started speaking to, our LGB and our transgender non-binary communities, our women, our racial and ethnic minorities. We need to really think about ways to sort of expand those. And when we're thinking about PrEP, talking about Ready, Set, PrEP, we know that we need a national PrEP program. And so we're hoping to advocate, but that needs funding. And what we mean by the national PrEP program, we know that the Ryan White program, right, has been an extremely successful program in terms of engaging people with HIV and getting them in care. So when we look at how well the Ryan White program that's funded by the federal government does, we are over 90% virally suppressed in the Ryan White programs compared to 66% nationally, right? So it does really well. And so I think the National PrEP program is set up to not only cover medications, which, by the way, one of the most effective medications is now generic. So you can really go generic and use that cost saving to fund the other wraparound services, right? You need to cover the visits for pre-exposure prophylaxis. You need to cover the testing, the HIV tests and the gonorrhea and chlamydia and syphilis testing. You need to cover the PrEP navigators and the outreach sort of workers and our peer navigators and our community health workers. Those are those individuals are going to keep these patients getting them in care and keeping them in care. And so I think while we are starting to do some work in advancement, we need to continue to sort of funnel in money and not cut money towards all these programming for us to be able to really, truly get to ending the HIV epidemic.
Marwan, you sort of used the words vulnerable and progress, and I note that the International AIDS Conference highlighted promising results and the safety of long-acting antiretroviral medication for HIV prevention in pregnancy. Fill us a little more on what's happening in that area.
Oh, yes. No, thank you for that question. This is extremely exciting. So this was Purpose 1 and Purpose 2 studies that were done. The one that you're referring to specifically was Purpose 1 study that really engaged cisgender women, including, they did not exclude anybody who was pregnant. So during that study, there was probably around 500 or so pregnancies during that study. And this was a medication called lenacapavir, which is a subcutaneous injection that is done every 6 months, twice a year only, subcutaneous injection that showed zero new infections. Wow. in this cohort. And the Purpose 2 looked at men of sex with men, transgender women, as well as trans men and gender non-binary as well. And that showed a 96% efficacy, as again, with two subcutaneous shots a year. And so that was even superior to the current medications that we have for PrEP, which is are extremely effective as well, right? So you can imagine how we can, if we can scale this up, of two subcutaneous shots, right? So and get it to the people that need it, and we would drop the infection rates dramatically. The issue here, right, again, is cost and how we're going to scale this up and get these shots to our patients.
Well, thank you for ending on that note of progress. And Dr. Vincent Guillermo Ramos, Dr. Marwan Haddad, thank you both for joining us today. Thank you to our audience for being here. A reminder to be sure and subscribe to our videos on YouTube. Find us on Facebook and X with our account name, CHC Radio. As always, go online to chcradio.com to sign up for emails. And please share your thoughts and comments about this program. Take care. Be well. Vincent and Marwan, again, thank you for all the great work that you do. This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.